Hi there, everyone. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Yesterday, I had a wonderful guest on the air. He's just someone who I've respected for so many years. And he was talking about, he wrote a book about death. Death, about facing death. And I thought about that, and I said, you know, there's another kind of death that we need to deal with. It's spelled D-E-B-T, debt, you know, the debt of death, or the death of debt. And why do they pronounce it debt anyway if it's got a B in it? Where did that B come from, debt? You know, as in debit? Is that what debt is coming from? Well, where's all debt come from? You know, I was looking at another thing. You know, Bill Gates is now worth, he plays bridge with his friend, Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett is worth $62 billion. Billion dollars. $62,000 million. Lots and lots and lots of zeros. Isn't that unfathomable? And what about, that's Warren Buffett. Bill Gates is worth $58 billion. So now you have Bill Gates worth $58 billion and Warren Buffett worth $62 billion. And, you know, they do some good stuff with their money. I mean, certainly Bill Gates does. Warren Buffett made $10 billion over the last year. So why are you worried about your credit card debt? Now that's what we're talking about today. How is it that the majority of people struggle day to day? And I'm not going to talk about the inequality of all this, but how did this whole debt thing happen? Where did debt come from? When I was a kid and I was in school, I remember it used to be quite an achievement to get a credit card. I think I got one when I was 32 years old. I earned my credit card. Nowadays, they throw them at you in school. Credit cards and debt, they work in a very funny kind of way. And I really believe I could go into it in debt, but in depth. But I believe that credit cards are a way of creating indentured servants. You know, we lend you money, but then we own you forever. We own you. We're going to charge you such interest, which is what they did with the slaves when they freed the slaves. They were forced to sell the slaves back to themselves, and so the slave could buy his freedom, and then he would be in debt to his landowner, and then the landowner would charge such interest that he could never be free. It was just a simple system. Passed it on to American Express and MasterCard. They got the idea. But how did this all happen? What happened? What happened that people got so deeply in debt? Where did this mortgage crisis come from? The psychology of money. Today I want to talk about the psychology of money and where you fit in with the psychology of money and what money is and what money is to different people. A woman came to me for a job and I was asking her, I told her I would contact her back, so I called her, and she didn't answer her phone, and she didn't get back to me for 3 days. Now, she wanted a job. We have a lot of occasionally need administrative assistance to work here, so she called me. And I called her back, and she didn't answer me for 3 days. And I said, well, that's remarkable. How could she, if she wants a job, how could she not answer me in 3 days? Well, finally we spoke. She was a lovely person. Came in, I was ready to hire her for the job. I called her again, and she didn't respond to me for 3 days. And when I asked her what was wrong, she said, oh, I just never get calls on that line. I said, no, that can't be the case. You want this job, and yet you don't answer your phone. There's got to be a reason. Somebody must be chasing you. I thought maybe she had somebody was harassing her, or, you know, somebody was bothering her a great deal. And she finally fessed up. She said, no, it's the bill collectors. She said, they're after me. The IRS is after me. Everybody's after me. She said, they're all after me for money that I've spent that I haven't paid back. I'm extended to the credit card companies, to the banks, and to the IRS. And they were all chasing me. And I said, well, if you worked here, what would happen? And then she said, well, you'd have to pay me illegally off the books. And I said, no, I don't do that. And she said, well, I can't work there then, which I understood. So here gets the question, how do you get in that position? I had another employee who once worked for me, and she was in deep credit card debt. She was paying 28% interest on her credit card, but she was a faithful employee, and I said to her, look, why don't I lend you the money out of your retirement plan so you could pay off the debt? And she took a huge loan out of her retirement plan, but she didn't pay off the debt. She kept the debt and kept the money and spent the money. No longer works with me, but, you know, her retirement plan kind of covered it up and took care of everything. So there's a psychology, there's an attitude here about money, and it's something about pay ahead. You know, it's a concept of pay ahead. Pay ahead means buy it now, pay later. Get a home and buy a mortgage and get a mortgage. That was an original idea. That made sense, didn't it? But nowadays, you get a home, you get a mortgage, you get an adjustable rate mortgage. The adjustable rate mortgage goes up to 8, 9, 10% over time, you know, as agreed by the banks. And you just can't pay it. Your income doesn't go up. Someone was telling me about a pharmacist who said that she had earned a certain amount of money during a certain period of time and made plans based on her income. But inflation and everything went far beyond her income because pharmacist income didn't increase by that amount. So it's a difficulty, you know, money. Money and the idea of keeping money in order occupies so much of so many people's minds. And we have to talk about that. Because it is part of your psychology. If you think love occupies your mind, money, another mental occupation. You can't live without love. Can you live without money? Well, some people do. You know, they really live on a very frugal life. They live very just off the land as best they can. They do. They live without excesses. Some people do. Other people don't want it that way. They want to have things. You know, it's like for many people, that one of their ways of getting even with the world is to run debt. One of their ways of just getting back at the world, it's like a form of anger. Passive-aggressive people frequently run into extreme credit card debt. I believe that credit card debt can be a form of passive aggression. Because here's what happens. They chase you now to collect the money. And now you're avoiding them. And they're saying, you must, you must, you must. And you say, oh, yes, I will, and then you don't. And this is this kind of wonderful battle that you get into, where you get into a battle with the collectors, where they are chasing you, and you're just ducking out of their way, getting out of their way. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. We're talking about money today, and we're going to probably be talking to you, get you on the phone as well. So who spends a lot of money? You know, there's one known thing in psychiatry about the manic depressive disorder or bipolar disorder, that one of the signs of mania, now mania doesn't mean like maniac. Mania is a hyperstate, part of the bipolar disorder, chemical kind of imbalance. But one of the symptoms of it is excessive spending. Well, you don't have to be manic to have mania. You can have a manic kind of fit even if you're not manic. You could have a kind of moment, the mood that takes over you where you say, I'm going to buy those Jimmy Choo's, or I'm going to go buy that thing, or I'm going to take that trip, or I'm going to put it on the credit card, or impulsive buying. The impulsive buyers are frequently people who say to themselves, they make up some excuse in their mind about how they're going to be able to cover their charges, but it's an impulse, and an impulse is always based on an emotional state of unrest. Yes, the impulse to go beyond yourself is based on some discomfort that you feel. Think about the beginning of mankind. Think about our simian ancestors. Think about the orangutans. They were uncomfortable because they couldn't get enough food. So they learned if they took a branch instead of their hands, and they reached up and they knocked off a banana off a higher tree, if they reached beyond themselves, they could get food. And man developed along this tree, always reaching beyond himself. Man likes to reach. Mankind likes to reach. They like to stretch. They like to stretch their brains. They like to stretch their minds. They like to go beyond themselves. It's almost like if we could imagine ourselves taller than we are, we'll become taller. If we could imagine ourselves richer than we are, we feel richer. Well, you go buy yourself a fancy car, even if you can't afford it. And for a little while, you do feel richer until that payment comes due. Then you feel really poor. You can get yourself a fancy house until that mortgage comes due, until you can't afford the heat, until you got to keep the temperature down at 50 degrees in your own house because you can't afford the oil. So this all happens, and it happens. It makes so much sense. There's so much depression out there. There are so many people feeling depressed and run down. They do anything to reach for the banana. They'll do anything to feel better, even if it's a temporary solution to something that's a long-term problem. So manic people frequently go on a manic spree, and they go on a shopping spree. And you don't know where you see it the most. You see it on eBay. eBay people are just, the whole existence of eBay is based on manic spending. How much junk do you think is sold on eBay? That's what eBay was based on. Sell your junk. That's what it came along. They said, you want to sell something on your, you want to sell junk? Want to sell something you don't want? You know, that thing that you, the broken vase that you glued together? Sell it. Sell it, and we'll put it on eBay, and then somebody comes along, and then they bid against somebody else, and they get into the excitement of buying it. And what are you going to buy, and how much of it, and how important is it? And so eBay is built on it. A whole industry is built on man's manic spending. Of course, you could say it is built on conservatism as well, wanting to get things at cheap prices. But, you know, you're kind of walking a tightrope when you walk on something like eBay because of quality control not being there. You can't see it. You can't feel it. You can't taste it. You're doing the best you can. You're hoping you're not in the hands of a hustler. You know, but there's an awful lot of hustlers out there. I meet people every day who say they make a living exploiting people off eBay. They just, you know, take advantage of whatever they can. Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So the thing we want to talk about today is why we have this urge to spend, and once we spend, what we could do about it. And let me give you a little help to those of you in debt. Here's something you don't know. You don't know about debt collectors. You know, debt collectors, I just can't imagine what it is to be somebody who goes out to collect debts. But here's the way it works. The credit card companies, to the best of my understanding, want to extend debt mostly to the people who can't afford to pay it. They want to go to the people who will go bankrupt. They absolutely, I mean, they don't send me credit card offers because I never run into debt, but they do send credit card offers to the people who spend money earning credit card debt. The more debt you have, the more credit card offers you get, because the credit card companies immediately sell your debt to somebody else. And that somebody else sells it to somebody else. And a whole industry is based around the fact that you can't afford to pay off your bills, and they know it. They all know it. So then it gets somewhere down the line for 5 cents on a dollar. A debt collector picks up your bill and tries to get you to pay up. Now you get the call from the debt collectors. How many of you have ever had debt collectors chasing you? Have you ever had that experience? Have you ever had that experience? Oh, my gosh. They call you day and night. They call your jobs. They threaten you. They do all kinds of things. They send you all kinds of notes. Here's a couple of things I looked at. I wanted to check what are the legal, what can they do and what can't they do. Collectors generally cannot contact you after you write a letter to the collection agency telling it to stop. Get that? You get a collection agency calling you, you get their name and address, you write them a letter, send it to them and say, I want you to stop calling me. And do you know legally they must stop calling you? It's kind of simple, don't you think? See, but people are afraid to take that step because they feel guilty because they're in debt and they're being chased. The agency may still inform you if the debt collector or creditor intends to take some specific action. They could do that. And by the way, the letter does not absolve you from the debt. You can still be sued by the original collector, but the debt collector, that agency, gets off your back. Number two, collectors cannot contact your friends, your relatives, your employers, or others except to find out where you live and work. They cannot say that you're in debt. It's illegal. They can be deeply sued if they have somebody saying, he told me that you owed a lot of money. You know, the debt collectors can contact people. So if they threaten to call other people, they can call them all they want to try to get your name and address, but they can't say what it's about. They can't tell the people they call or contact that you owe money. They're prohibited from contacting any third parties more than once. So if they call your mother to try to find out where you live, they can't call her twice, so they can't harass your family. And they do very often suggest to you on the phone, I'm going to keep calling your mother until you pay. They can't do it. It's illegal. And they won't do it, believe it or not. They cannot make any false statements, including that you will be arrested. You know, they can't make any claims about what will happen to you. They can't threaten to have money deducted from your paycheck or to sue you unless a collection agency or creditor actually intends to do so. And most of them abide by the law. They have a code of conduct mandated by the Association of Credit and Collection Professionals. But it's up to you to not be afraid. If you got yourself in debt, remember, a debt collector is a lawyer, somebody who wishes he could be a lawyer. And what he is doing and what they are doing when they get on the phone and they collect from you, they know this is the dregs. They know they don't want to be doing it. They know they're dealing with starving people. They know, and in some level, they sell their soul just to collect the debt, and they say all kinds of funny things. So have a little compassion for them, but don't be intimidated by debt collectors. Don't be afraid of them. Just get their name, get their address, get their phone number, send them a letter, keep a copy of the letter, and say, don't contact me again. Because as soon as they don't, they send it right back. So this is Armand DeMille with you with Deposit of Mind. We're going to be taking your calls in a little bit about debt. You know, some people who get debt, many people who get into debt, you know, they could say they're optimists. You know, now there's a difference between optimism and extreme optimism. Optimistic people are financially savvy, but a research study showed that too much optimism can lead to financial failure. Extremely optimistic people tend to have short planning horizons and make foolish money decisions. The difference between optimists and extreme optimists are remarkable and suggest that over-optimism, like overconfidence, may in fact lead to behaviors that are unwise. Dr. Puri, who Duke University professor Puri and Robinson compared optimists and extreme optimists, and they found that small doses of optimism can lead to wise financial decisions, like a savings plan, like a decent mortgage with a good part date, you know, a good pay down. You know, if you give a good advance or you give a good deposit and you can figure it out and you have it all figured, that could be part of your optimism. I will be able to keep it going. Extreme optimism, on the other hand, those people who have extreme optimists make irresponsible money moves and lose money. Extreme optimists go to Atlantic City and say, I'm going to make our money that way. I'm going to gamble and win. How do you know if you're an extreme optimist? Your bank balance aside, extreme optimists tend to work fewer hours, save less money, are less likely to pay off their credit card balances immediately, and have a higher proportion of individual stocks in their portfolios. They have these individual stocks that they're gambling on as opposed to funds. Extreme optimists are also likely to be day traders. Run-of-the-mill optimists, on the other hand, work longer hours, believe their income will grow out of the next 5 years, plan to retire later or not at all, and save more money. Extreme optimists are. No, that didn't make sense. That's the regular optimist. Well, anyway, so the difference between an optimist and an extreme optimist is something to be concerned, because when you think about people being manic, but, you know, people being depressed also can be a reason to spend money. You know, sometimes spending money saves your life. Sometimes life is so bad, it's so rough, it's so tough, you got nothing, absolutely nothing. They're pounding on your door, they want the money. A high number of people who are suicidal are deeply into debt. Now, there's a lot of reason for that, of course, because you could say a high number of people who are suicidal don't function too well, and a high lot of people who don't function too well, therefore commit suicide. But a lot of people commit suicide just because they're in debt. They get hounded, they're ruined, they have little future, the thing follows them around, a bankruptcy follows them wherever they go, they won't get hired because people are afraid of their being too needy. So if you're on death's door and you feel like you really want to give it up and quit because it's so darn hard, I saw somebody recently who had a $30,000 credit card debt, and the interest payment was $400 a month. And I know it doesn't make much sense, but it was. It was $400 a month, interest and late fees, and she was paying off $500 a month to try to clear up her debt. She wasn't going anywhere. Right? That debt plus the annual fee plus everything else that gets added in means that she's going nowhere. She thinks she's paying it off at $500 a month. Not so. Anyway, when you find yourself inundated, you find yourself depressed, you got nothing around you, your wife left you because you couldn't earn enough money to take care of the kids, you feel like you... What feels better than doing something that's going to give you a little juice? Well, you get some juice by gambling. That's one thing people do. There's a lot of depressed people who wind up in the casinos and they wind up at the tracks. They're just trying to get some juice. Even if they lose, they get juice. You know, juice, surge of dopamine, surge of adrenaline, surge of cortisol, make me feel good. You know, give me something that's going to give me a little excitement in some way. So that's one thing depressed people do. Depressed people also go out and spend. Well, I'll buy that Lamborghini. You know, what the hell? I'll just see. Now, you know, you go out and you buy something expensive and you can't pay for it, or you pay for a big meal, or you do something just to make yourself feel better. That seems fair, don't you think? It seems fair that if a person's about to kill themselves, they should be allowed to sink themselves into debt one more step just to stay alive for a day. I understand. I really understand. What about you? How's your money story? WBAI, you know us. We have no money. WBAI, 99.5% poor. Okay, 99.5 FM on your dial. 212 is our telephone number. Yeah, I think I'll wait and take calls just a little later. 75% of people who claim they make major, who claim they don't make major purchases on credit cards until they can pay them off immediately. If you ask people, how many of you will buy things on credit cards? 75% will say, I don't make any purchases until I am sure I'm going to pay them off. That's 75%. 75%. Now, something about this is wrong, because 74% say that they are always concerned that they'll be able to pay off their credit card bills each month. So 75% say they will not spend, but 74% are concerned about not being able to spend. That means they have spent excess money, more money than they're sure they could pay off. If people's claims about themselves are deceptive, then take the following consumer is beyond cynical. 58% of people claim to pay off their credit card cards in full every month. But the study showed that it's only 40% that do. So 58% claim they do, and only 40% do. And only 3% believe that most other people pay off their credit cards in debt in full. Only 3% of the people believe that everybody else pays it off. The rest believe, no, they pay it off on time. And it's very tough to believe. So does this survey prove that Americans are unconscionable braggarts? No, no, not exactly. Talking about money is harder than talking about sex. You know, it's just one of those things where our relationship to money is so complex. It's this love-hate relationship. Money is valued certainly for its own sake. It can also help us live a more comfortable life, but it's also measured for its intrinsic value to us as people. You feel as good as the money you have in the bank. It's an unfortunate thing. It's a sense of your own value. You feel poor and you go visit your family when you're poor, and your family sees you as poor. Most people who are poor tell their parents, I don't need anything, but you need stuff desperately, but you don't want your parents to keep feeling bad about you. So you want to look good. Of course it makes sense. In all of nature, you're always trying to look better so you will attract a better mate, right? The average hawk will go out and build a better nest. You know, the average bumblebee female will trim herself so that she will look and warble her song or buzz her buzz, whatever she does, you know. It's like the average everybody who tries to make themselves bigger than they are in some way. And having money means you could attract something better, but then you got to maintain it. You know, how you going to keep it going? Well, if you're a female and you're making it going by making yourself attractive, at least that's not too expensive to do. You can make yourself physically attractive. You can keep in shape. But if you're a male who thinks that he's got to be able to supply you with, you know, a home and a house and things like that, I mean, people are very attracted to Warren Buffett. I'm very attracted to Warren Buffett. He could take care of me and my whole family and all of WBAI, all of Pacifica. You know, I mean, isn't that attractive? But of course, we're also all attracted to a benevolent daddy that we hope will take care of us, and we all hope for that in some way. We're hoping that someday it comes along, and that's why there's a thing called a lottery out there. It's just wishing that one day we're going to hit something that's just going to take care of us completely. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. When you owe money to the creditors, you know, there's a stigma attached to it. People won't discuss it with their closest friends or their relatives. They don't feel comfortable saying, I have this problem. I can't get out of debt. Who says that to who? Nobody says it. Say it to your therapist so you hope they'll reduce your fee. You know? It's a means of self-justification. It's a way of saying, you know, you lie about your finances. People lie about it all the time. How are you doing? I'm doing fine. You know, it's just one of the great shames. It's almost one of the greatest shames there are, and it's silly because it's just another factor. People, if you're in debt and you're somebody who's low on money and you can't afford to pay for things, well, you just get by as well you can. But there's nothing if you haven't sold your soul to be able to take a job that you don't agree with, and you haven't been able to provide, and you haven't been able to make that progress that you wanted to make. It's okay. But the self, the belief in self that comes from not having money, that shaken belief in self, makes people get out there and spend money like crazy just because of their low self-esteem. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. It's just about 1:30 here. I'm going to play you a little music today, and then I'll come back to you. 212-209-2900 is our number, 212-209-2900. And I am going to play you something with a little energy. How about a little Jerry Lee Lewis? Are you ready for that? You ready to jiggle? 212-209-2900. I'll be taking your calls right after the music. This is Armand DeMille. Here is a little Jerry Lee. Thank you. money. It's almost embarrassing, huh, money? Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
This is Hannah.
Hello, Hannah.
That's a perfect song.
It's always a perfect song, that's if you happen to know.
That's a perfect song. I'd like to just share a few things. I have a cold, so I can't talk long. The part about the psychological portraits about optimists and pessimists regarding money, I'm not too sure I support that. But I definitely agree, because I am now going through a lawsuit with Citibank, and I think I might be able to shed light on a few things that could help people.
Good.
And most of the credit card debt are not from people who are the big gambler types. It's people who borrow money maybe for a plane trip, and it increases over 10 years' time, and 1,000 becomes 3,000, becomes 5,000 20 years later. It's a lot of people fall into that area. And that's why, you know, the whole credit card industry, as well as the debt buying industry, is largely hoaxy.
Did you ever find out who bought your debt, Hannah?
Yeah, well, this is what I did. It took a while, actually. I'm fighting it, and I'm almost at the end of the line, and I can tell people who can be very helpful for them. First of all, debt buying. You did talk about that, but one thing, I don't know if I got online before or after you said it, with debt buying, there's a simple form that people can get from either MFY Legal Services or Legal Aid. It's a do not call form. And if they call you, except for one more time, these are debt collectors or debt buyers, as they are known, that buy people's debts for 2 cents on the dollar or whatever it is. If they call even one more time after you send them the form, they're permitted one more phone call, and after that, they are legally liable, meaning you can sue them.
Right, but now you have to be able to afford a lawyer to sue them.
Well, you go to...
You know what I mean? Then you go to Legal Aid and you try.
Yeah, I can't afford a lawyer, or else I would be paying
they're
2,000 or whatever they are. But they're non-negotiable. So what the clever ones do...
A question I have for you is the following. Do you suggest you send that letter, registered mail, certified receipt, FedEx or something,
you
so that can. You can prove that they got it?
Yes, I would do it, definitely. But it almost doesn't matter, because a lot of people have ideas about who these debt collectors really are. They're like students sitting at their laptop, and they make a commission if they can squeeze some dough out of people. And
so they're not even sitting in a central
place.
You think they're sitting in an office with all the other debt collectors?
Online, you can go online and find out. That's why I asked them.
You can get a job as a debt collector. Right.
I asked them, why are you doing this instead of working in the local Starbucks, But the thing is, if it bounces into legal hands, like it was in my case, where Citibank employs lawyers to do their work for them, then either you have to answer the summons, or a lot of people just throw it away, rip it up, in which case they pass a judgment without you being there in court. And then they could freeze your bank accounts for 20 years. And I'm also fighting this because I'm writing legislators and people in leadership positions about how all this needs to be regulated.
Is there a website or a blog where people who communicate about this kind of thing?
I don't know. I think they can actually just call MFY Legal Services, and they can be sent all the packages relating to trying to fight either debt collectors or...
What does MFY stand for? Money for You?
No, Mr. Paul. I don't know what the acronym is. It's MFY Legal Services, and they can be accessed online and also in the phone book, if people still use it. But one thing is very important for people to know, because you went to the extreme about suicide. That's totally unspeakable at this point in time. People can apply for bankruptcy, and you can find legal help that does not cost much or can cost nothing. Like in my case, I have a fabulous young attorney that's helping me try to beat this Citibank case. Now, most of the time, Citibank wins because they're actually not doing well, and they're suing like millions of people to try to get money that they've lost in bad loans themselves. But let me tell you one thing. What you learn by working with a legal aid society or MFY Legal or Brooklyn Legal, one of the people representing South Brooklyn Legal did a whole show on BAI not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very good topic, this money thing, because of our, you know, the corporate...
Well, Hannah, let me ask you something. How have you gotten by with all of this stress? I mean, you sound so calm. You know,
I'm basically Buddhist in my worldview, and I was determined. I thought it was important for me to fight the case.
Well, most people I know who are in debt tend to be histrionic, tend to be hysterical, tend to go out the edges. They tend to be people...
Because the fear level is so intense regarding consequences. If they understood that if they do the step-by-step, for instance...
But you see, most of the people who run into debt can't do step-by-step of anything. Many of the people who do it don't have a logical mind. If they had a logical mind, they have an impulsive mind, you know? It's part of the illness of debt.
Well, wait a second. There's something called Debtors Anonymous,
yep.
Which I do not feel I fall into that area.
Like you're just too logical to fall into that.
No, it's not about that. It's about, I think what really people, that's why I called. I think people need to know that most of the debt that they are accruing, I'm not talking about buying cars or trips to the Bahamas, expensive purchases. Most of the debts that are accrued basically develop into very much larger debts because of surcharges, late charges, penalties, undisclosed charges. Chase Bank was sued for $30 million for undisclosed charges. The banks themselves, particularly the commercial banks, are actually getting away with things they shouldn't get away with and should be regulated, which is what sort of I'm working on. For instance, the summons that was given to me for this particular case, if I hadn't gone to MFY Legal Services, I would not have known that it was improper service to get them on a small technicality. That small technicality is what I'm basing my whole case on. They didn't serve me properly, meaning they mailed it to me instead of serving it to me directly at my door or giving it to a neighbor. But they claim they did, except I asked for the proof, and they don't have the proof. So I have to go to court. The judge granted me what was called a traverse hearing, which is a small victory. And the next step is they will either make a judgment for or against me. If it's against me, that's going to be a little bit of a problem. I don't have any money in my bank, but I'm like WBAI because I support WBAI for 40 years.
Well, Hannah, I want to thank you very much. I want to get some of these other calls in as well, and thank you for the information.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
212-209-2900. There's another thing that I've seen, you know, I wanted to just mention another reason why people run debt very often is revenge. And I started talking about it before. I know people, women in relationships would be... husbands would be working, they'd spend their husband's money. And they had this feeling of spending their husband's money, running up these debts, and having him work extra hard to meet these debts. And it was almost like their aggression, their anger at their husbands was manifesting, or their anger at themselves for being in a marriage where there was no love, manifested in creating this kind of debt fight, struggle over money. A good shrink I used to know that said that whenever couples are fighting about money, they're fighting about sex. He said, guaranteed, if you look at their sex lives, you're going to find the same dysfunctionality you find in their financial lives. He said, you could just take one and talk about it. Who spends more? Who spends faster? You know? And he said, there are so many things that are related to sex. He said, you'll find that if the couple has money problems, they have sex problems. Interesting concept. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello there.
Yeah, how you doing? My name is Ed. I'm from Queens.
Hello, Ed.
All right. And it was
Ed, is your radio turned all the way down?
Yeah, my radio's off, actually.
Okay, great. Thank you. Then you must be on a cell phone, right?
Yeah, I'm on a cell phone. Yeah, I'm at work right now. And I listen to you every day.
Well, thank you, Ed.
No, I find it interesting. And just... reason why I call is because me and my wife are having money problems.
Okay. And are you and your wife also having sex problems?
Well, yeah.
Truth.
Now that I think about it, you know, it's not as much as I would like. We don't have sexual relations as much as I would like to.
And what gets in the way of that? You think
the situation is this. Before I met her, I was in a previous relationship, and I was very young, and it ended very badly. And I allowed myself to get carried away with it, and I got in severe debt, among other things. And it lasted, I was in heavy debt, like $50,000 worth of credit card debt, things like that, trying to compensate. And I managed to marshal myself, and with some help from my friends and God, I got out of it. And now I'm debt free. I don't have any debt. I live like on a cash basis. I can pay for everything pretty much straightforward.
That's pretty great.
Well, it feels good. It feels good to come through that dark period in my life and thank God, because I believe in God, and it really brought me through. But the situation is, I met my wife about 5 years ago, and we found each other, you know, we found attraction for each other, and we got married. But the situation is, she thinks I'm cheap, and I'm very frugal, because I'm not going to lie. I'm very afraid of being in debt again. I don't want that to ever happen.
Sure.
And she thinks I am very cheap. She's always getting on my case about, oh, you could do this, oh, we're responsible. And she's got on this new kick to where she thinks I don't deserve, she thinks subconsciously that I don't deserve nice things.
Okay, let me ask you something, Ed. Okay, yeah. Now, I fully understand where you are. And pardon me, even though this may sound like I'm doing this flippantly, I want to ask you about the sex issue.
Yeah.
What does she think you need to do to make her more happy sexually?
I'm not into her enough.
Yeah, she says that, and that means that you don't appreciate the finer things. She wants a little more foreplay. She wants more kisses. She wants more affection. She wants more touch. She wants you not to go right for the honey pot. She wants you not to just jump right in. She wants you to be a little more sensitive to her in general, showing that you have this kind of passion for her, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm
okay, now wait, we stop there. That's what she's asking for. And she's asking for the same thing with money. She's asking for you to show your appreciation for her. She's not really calling you. You see, when people are tight with money, they're also tight with their affections. And here's what I say to you. I say to you, pay attention to what she wants in the affections. And you'll find both you and she will loosen up financially. You'll both change in that area. Somebody who is in a relationship wants to feel loved. They want to feel loved and they want to feel desired. And that's more important than everything else. And if you ignore that, and in place of that, you're going to wind up talking about money and things like that and fighting over kids and stuff like that.
I got to be honest with you. I'm not the most emotional person. You know what I mean?
My father, you're a sensitive man, though. I could hear that.
I mean, I don't express emotion that well. I mean, I can cop to that.
Man. Yeah, well, you see, expressing emotion well, it's not a deficiency. Just knowing that you don't is a good enough thing. And to be able to say to your wife, you know, I don't express emotion very well, but I don't, you know, I want you to know that from the bottom of my soul, I love you. And you're my mate, and you're the most precious thing to me, and nothing else matters to me. I mean, that much you could say.
Yeah, if
you want to write down the words, go ahead.
I need to. I would feel funny saying that.
I understand. No, but, you know, I understand. But that's what she's asking for.
Okay.
Okay, and thanks for calling in, and thanks for listening all the time.
Thank you.
And congratulations.
Thanks. Have a good day.
That must be an amazing thing, to have been in debt and then to climb out of it, not by achieving some big financial success, but to work yourself out of it and swear, never again. Or as the Raven would say, never more. 212-209-2900. This is Armand Dumas. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. 212-209-2900. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. My name is Gloria. I'm from Manhattan. How are you?
Good, Gloria.
It's funny that you talk about this topic today. Last Thursday, I lost my job.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm feeling the crunch of, what am I going to do now? Jobs are so hard to come by. And it relates to the topics that you've been talking about basically all week, because you've been talking about relationships. And I actually happen to be going out with somebody who lives in another state, who lives in Atlanta. And so now I'm making a decision whether it's time for me to move to Atlanta for financial reasons, because I don't know if I would move if it wasn't financial.
Do you have a profession?
Yeah, I do.
What do you do?
I actually do. I have been doing customer service for a really long time, and I was a customer service manager at a retail company.
Uh-huh.
And because of this thing with people not wanting to buy a lot of things from China, the business suffered, so they eliminated my position. And I really feel sad that I lost my job, but I'm like at a crossroads. Do I move to Atlanta and pursue this relationship as well as financially, or do I try to find something and stay in New York?
Yeah, it's a tough thing. Now, what are you doing with your love down there in Atlanta? What's happening with that? How come he's there and you're here?
Well, he took a job down in Atlanta. He's a truck driver, and they offered him, the company he worked for had a lot of opportunities in Atlanta. So he said, you know what, I'm going to go to Atlanta, and I'm going to try to, you know, pursue a little bit more opportunities there. And he's really working well there, and he's, you know, already been the employee of the week, the employee of the month. So he really likes it, and I've been there quite a bit. So, you know, I don't know if this is like a sign that it's time for me to move to Atlanta.
Well, what would hold you back? What would hold you here? Your family?
Not really, no. No, my family wouldn't hold me here. Actually, what was holding me here was the job.
Uh-huh. So it seems like somebody just sent you a pair of wings in the mail. You know,
basically.
It sounds like somebody just said, oh, let's fire her so she could go be with her boyfriend.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
And what scares you? Tell me what frightens you. Does anything frighten you about being in a city you've never been in? Well, you've been in Atlanta. You know the city.
I've been to Atlanta, but I don't know it the way I know New York. Like, if somebody says something to me about New York, I can close my eyes and picture what's on what corner. I have friends who are here. I have a church that I attend. I have... Everything I know is here, so the scary part is that I'll be going to a new city with nobody that I know, except maybe one person. Maybe I have to find a job before I get there or when I get there. So it's just a lot of unknown.
Would you be living with your boyfriend when you go there?
At first I thought I would, but I'm not sure. Like, he's like, well, you can come and live here. He is renting a house.
Yeah, you know what it sounds like to me? Sounds like your relationship with him is not strong enough for you to bet your money on him. Because it doesn't sound like he's saying, okay, honey, I'm going down to Atlanta and I'm gonna cut our path for us and then you're gonna follow me down. He didn't say that. He just said, I'm gonna follow some opportunity. And now he doesn't say, now come on down, I'm dying to see you, we're gonna live together and then we'll get married and I'm looking forward to it. He's not giving you that kind of energy. He's kind of there.
Oh, he does give me that energy. I think it's my resistance because the day I lost my job and I did call him and tell him I lost my job, he goes, okay, my birthday is in this month. So he's like, well, on your birthday, I'm going to rent a truck. I'm going to drive. I'll come up there on the Friday before your birthday and I'll rent a truck and we'll pack up all your stuff and then you can come back down here to Atlanta with me. And that's it.
Oh, my gosh.
It's my resistance that goes, I'm so used to being on my own, taking care of myself, working every day, paying my own bills, that to have to rely on somebody is a very scary proposition.
You see, so there you are. And that's it. You know, and one of the things, when you rely on somebody for a little bit, it doesn't mean you rely on them forever. You sound like a very self-reliant person. Were you born on March 15th?
March 21st.
March 21st.
Yep.
Is that the first day of spring?
It is. The first day of spring, so it's the first day of new beginnings. It's
oh,
the first
my
day
gosh,
of spring.
Almighty. How much more
today
of a message?
Actually
what are they
going to
send
year?
You? They're going to send you feathers and any day now.
I know, and this year it happens to be Good Friday.
And it's on Good Friday of all things.
Of all things, this year it happens to fall on Good Friday.
And I know you believe in a God that will follow you anywhere.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not just a New York God.
No,
you
it's
know,
not.
It's not the God who hangs out in New York and says, you don't leave New York.
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like, you know, maybe I should just take a chance and spread my wings and, you know.
Give us a call from Atlanta, will you?
I will. Thank you.
Sure.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. She seems like she had her decision made. But sometimes you get scared, you know? I mean, taking that leap of faith, taking that jump, making that commitment, doing something different for yourself, it's so rough. It's a thing. It's a thing about trying to learn about these words. You know, nowadays they use the word finances instead of money. Don't, like, money's a bad word. Like, people say wealthy instead of rich because they don't like the word rich because it has such bads, but wealthy is okay. It's like this, we're in a new world as it regards money and regards possessions and things that we have and things that we don't have. It's a very difficult time, my friends, and it looks like it's about to step into a more difficult time. Say I, who knows a little bit about some of the things that I see because I've seen it before. And people are having a tougher time, but they can't talk about it yet. And because they can't talk about it yet, you know, we're just going to see it unfold. So that's why we wanted to do a show for you about money. And we're going to keep talking about it as best we can. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. She talks about job openings. You know, on WBAI's website, they sometimes talk about job openings that are available and positions that are available, even at WBAI, just as we do on our website, thepositivemind.com. And so there's an awful lot going on out there where you don't have to just sell your soul to work somewhere. And that seems to be really important. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. with more stuff. And I think I'll play you some more money music.
Someone you know is in foreclosure, listen carefully.
There's a new scam in town targeting homeowners in foreclosure. Here's how it works.
Scammers promise to save you from foreclosure, telling you all you have to do is sign over the deed to your home. They say you can lease your home from them and then buy it back once you're on your financial feet.
Perhaps they offer you some cash.
After you've signed over your title, the scammer quickly gets a new mortgage on the property and evicts you from your home. You lose the equity and everything you've invested in your home.
New York has a new law outlining foreclosure rescue scams that went into effect on February 1st, 2007. These types of sale-leaseback scams that target people of color, seniors, and women may also violate the Federal Fair Housing Act.
If you believe you have been targeted by these scammers, please call New York City's information line 311
or NEDAP at 212-680-5100.
Brought to you by NEDAP.